Oh, Nick Cashew on the Fan. It's a little windy, but it's sunny outside. Feels like spring. We'll take it. We'll take all this, right? Every little bit that we possibly can. I'm at Nick Cashew on all the socials. We got ourselves a Game 7 last night in the NBA playoffs. We got another Game 7 coming up tonight, and I get it. Sixers-Celtics, you know, there's a little more history with those franchises than maybe Cavs-Raptors, but hey, right, what do we say? The greatest word in sports, Game 7. It's close. I would say championship-winning team is probably a phrase we might like more. It's been a while since we've had that in D.C., but, you know, we'll get there. As everybody's rebuilding in D.C., maybe the Wizards will be in one of these spots next year. And honestly, I think there's a chance this team's in the play-in tournament. To me, that's a successful season, is getting to that point. But so we have the Sixers coming back from 3-1, and we have the Celtics now looking at an offseason where the East is wide open and where the NBA playoffs are showing us that any team has an opportunity. And I will say what I said yesterday again. This is a great thing to look up at in the standings if you're the Wizards. Because there was a point for a while where we looked at the Celtics when they were up 3-1 in this series. Again, the difference a week makes, right? Last weekend it was the Celtics are going to run away with this series against the Sixers, and the Knicks are terrible, and they're going to fire Mike Brown. And now it's, well, look at the Knicks, and here go the Celtics. It's 1-2-3 Cancun. So things are very wide open in the Eastern Conference. And to watch the Sixers come back from down 3-1, winning a Game 7, going up against the Knicks in the next round. There is not one team in the Eastern Conference with the Pistons trying to avoid elimination today at 3:30 before that Game 7 later today with the Raptors and the Cavs. Look, if I'm the Wizards and I'm looking at where the Eastern Conference is, there is a future that has this team in playoff contention and doing it consistently if things fall their way this offseason, obviously with the lottery. And then on top of that, doing the right thing in terms of building this roster, having health next year, and, you know, guys healthy, whether Anthony Davis is there or not, whatever the case is. The Wizards have an opportunity to be a part of the conversation of the playoffs next year. That is the biggest thing that I have seen in these playoffs on the east side of things right now. It's the same thing with the NFC and the Commanders, where you're looking around going, who do you trust? Really, like, ask yourself right now in the NBA and the NFC side of things. So the Eastern Conference in the NBA, the NFC in the NFL when you're thinking Commanders. How many teams in either one of these do you trust? Like, it's amazing how similar both of these situations are for the Commanders and for the Wizards. Now, they're not necessarily in the same boat. I would still argue that the Commanders are about a year ahead in terms of, like, steps in a rebuild. I know last year they won 5 games, but we also know that that team was decimated by injuries. We know how the offseason went. They've already got their quarterback. To me, the equivalent for the Wizards of the getting your franchise quarterback, which is what we hope right now with Jaden Daniels, right? Year one, we already saw it. Year two, hurt. So we're kind of in that point of, like, what Jaden Daniels are we going to get in terms of health and all that? But the equivalent to having your starting quarterback figured out in the NFL is getting that franchise number one guy in the NBA. And that's where the lottery comes in for the Wizards. And, you know, where that's next weekend. That's a week away. Next weekend, yeah, the reality sets in next week. So let's do whatever we can. I don't know if you've got some infinity stones or, you know, some sort of voodoo or incense you can burn or whatever manifestation you need, but we need the Wizards to get the number one overall pick. At least you'd hope for that to be the case, right? But if you look at both the Eastern Conference and the NBA, the NFC in the NFL, and there are just, it almost feels like both are just equally wide open right now, where there's maybe one team you'd put at the top. For me, it's the Rams in the NFC, but every other team after that, I got major questions. That even includes the 49ers, and yes, the Seahawks have lost a lot of players for this offseason. I know they went to a Super Bowl last year, but they were, what, like 80-1 to go there before? It's not like everybody expected the Seahawks to even be where they were last season. But in the East, in the NBA, we thought it was going to be the Celtics. First, it was supposed to be a throwaway season for the Celtics. Then all of a sudden, it's like, wow, they can still play. Then Jason Tatum comes back, and you're thinking, well, this is a team that's going to just run through the East. They lose in the first round. It's completely wide open. The Pistons could get knocked out by the Magic today. And if I'm the Wizards, I'm looking around going, who do you trust in the East? Like, is there a team right now that you could look at from what you've seen in the playoffs where you go, yeah, you got to build to beat that team? It might not even be the Celtics anymore now. Now, are they aggressive? Could they go get a big this offseason that could stop Joel Embiid? Because clearly, that was there were two things that were the Celtics' kryptonite. Live by the three, die by the three. Well, guess what happened again? They shot under 30% from three. What have I said all week? Can't shoot threes, you're not going to win games. That's how it works with the Celtics. And we saw that again. Live by the three, die by the three. They died by the three at the end of the series, but they also had nobody to stop Joel Embiid inside. So, you know, if you're the Wizards, part of what you do when you build a team is you look around at the rest of the conference. This happens all the time in the NBA. It used to be back, you know, in the late 90s, it was everybody was trying to build a team that could stop Shaq, right? The Lakers had Shaq and Kobe, but it was Shaq first, really, and it was like, we need bigs. They can just take fouls. They can just deal with him inside. You build teams based on what you're going to have to compete with, right? Now, I get it. We could go, well, the Wizards had the worst record in the NBA. Why are we thinking playoffs? Well, hold on. For one, we know that team at the end of the season. We know what they were trying to do. They weren't the worst team in the NBA, but they're young. And I know there's a lot of steps to get to this point where you're talking playoffs and you're talking second round and all that, but the jumps can happen very quickly because it was maybe 3-4 years ago that the Cavs had won, what, 25 games, ended up winning 45 the next year. We saw the Pistons. The Pistons were a team that had basically the same win totals the Wizards have had over the last couple of years. They won 60 games this year. The jump can happen really fast. Even in the West, the Spurs, same thing. A lot of young players on these teams. You start building around them, everything clicks in one season. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that the Wizards can go from where they are now. Let's say they land the number one overall pick, and let's even say top three. You add that to the roster they have. I know Anthony Davis is a massive question. Ultimately, I don't think he's going to be here very long, if at all, next year. But let's just say that he is, and he's relatively healthy by Anthony Davis standards. And Trae Young's not going to make this a championship team, but he's going to make it a playoff team. You're adding talent there. As long as he's relatively efficient next year shooting, you're talking about a Wizards team that is a play-in team that, as we can see, you can be an 8 seed in the East and have a chance to move on to the second round, which is exactly what, you know, the Magic can do today. I mean, we got two Game 7s in the East. Magic, Pistons, and Raptors, Cavs. That's two Game 7s, and we could have two higher seeds get knocked out. The East is balanced, there's a lot of parity, and it's really wide open. If the Wizards were playing in the West, it's a different spot, right? Because you're looking at the Thunder going, God, they could be doing this for the next 10 years. By the way, a lot more first-round picks. The Spurs, right there with them, probably about a year behind in terms of that growth. Not to mention, who knows what the Lakers are going to do once LeBron's gone and how they can actually build a team that's not involved in LeBron, specifically what he wants. The Nuggets might have to still be aggressive with Nikola Jokic, all that. So the East is a really good spot for the Wizards to actually be sitting in right now. And I'm telling you, like, this is a situation where the jump for the Wizards can happen very quickly. If as long as they stay on track, they are in the conversation next year as a playoff team. The key things, though, are you got to see growth again from the young guys, which we saw. Alex Sarr from year one to year two, big difference. Do you see that jump in Trey Johnson? Do you see that in Will Riley? Do you see that in insert Wizards player here? I'm telling you, there could be a big jump with this team where they are in that conversation next year. And the one thing I know, too, and I've always tried to tell people this, right, because everybody's like, oh, everybody cares about his football in this town. It's not true. D.C.'s a hoops town, too, man. And I know I talk more NBA than most people on this station, but I do it for a reason, because I know people actually care about the NBA in D.C., whether it's, you know, listen, the Wizards have been out of sight, out of mind for a while for you, but it's changed now, right? Like, I've noticed that this year. People are buying in. I mean, I remember the John Wall, Bradley Beal peak eras where everybody loved the Wizards, man. I mean, there is a deeply rooted love for basketball in the DMV. It absolutely exists. You just got to show that there's a future. And for the longest time, the Wizards were sitting in NBA purgatory, and it was like win for the 8 seed and then win for the play-in tournament. It was a long stretch of that, and you get frustrated with that. That's why I've been so adamant that, like, what they're doing works. What they're doing is the right move. What they're doing is how you build a team. But they have to show us that the blueprint is now taking that next step. That's what's really important, right? Like, you're building around something that's not just, hey, down the road one day. You're not just chasing a carrot. It's not just trust the process Sixers, which was, I mean, it felt like a decade. But Joel Embiid's still around from that, so that seems to be working out. And that's the thing, too. I mean, the Sixers have gone through a lot of different iterations of this roster, but they've always had Joel Embiid there as part of this. And this was like, this kind of felt like a signature playoff moment for Joel Embiid. Coming back from the appendectomy, Sixers are down 3-1. He put up 34, 12, and 6 last night. Tyrese Maxey had 30. I mean, VJ Edgecombe, you want to talk about a rookie that nobody gave any credit to. There was no excitement around him really coming into this draft. And I was like, hold on, VJ Edgecombe can play too. He may not be Cooper Flagg in terms of hype, but the kid can play. The Sixers hadn't beaten Boston in a playoff series since 1982. I mean, that's 44 years. And they finally exercised the demons and were able to get past that. And we got two more Game 7s today. It's that peak, right, of just great playoff basketball. The NBA's got to be ecstatic, right? Because even if you're not a big NBA fan, or maybe you are just like a Wizards fan, you're like, I kind of like watching them, and you know the rest of the NBA, I'm not. This is the time to watch it. These are the types of games you want to have. It's great for the league. It's great for the fan base. It's great for this evolution of the NBA. Because, I mean, really, the NBA is in a transition right now. I mean, I talk about the East and having it being wide open, and the Wizards could be in this conversation and make these jumps the way some of these other young teams have. There's also the bigger question of, like, you know, who becomes the face of the NBA moving forward? And I don't think we're going to have a definitive answer for a while. It was like when Jordan retired, the question kind of became, well, is it Duncan? No, he's too boring. Was it Kobe? Yeah, maybe, but he's also got Shaq with him because that was then, you know, back with the Lakers. And then you had this transition from, you know, 98 to 2003 when LeBron got drafted, and it was kind of like, oh, well, LeBron's probably going to be that guy. But then Kobe was in the conversation. So I'll just tell you this now. When you hear people talk about the face of the league in the NBA, there's not going to be one answer for a while, most likely. There's maybe a chance that somebody coming up in this draft gets put in that conversation, and maybe they're a Wizard. I mean, really, you draft A.J. Tabonsa if you're the Wizards. You have the number one overall pick. In a year or two, what if he is in the conversation? Is, hey, this guy's now one of the faces of the league in the NBA. Young, but the Wizards are in the playoffs. The Wizards are, you know, a 4-5 seed a couple of years from now. You're seeing that growth. You're seeing that acceleration from this team. And the Wizards are no longer that, like, oh, that team in the East. No, it's actually a team that's talked about as, you know, one that's growing, one that's up and coming, one that's where the Thunder was a couple of years ago, whatever the case is. That is a possibility. But the NBA has got a weird transition going on right now, and every league does. There was a point for a while in the NBA where it was like Peyton Manning's career is winding down. We thought Tom Brady's career was winding down, and then it extended like 7 more years. I remember it was like Tom Brady was like 37, and the Patriots had a rough start to the year. So we're talking, you know, God, it's probably close to 10 years ago at this point now. People were starting to question whether Tom Brady had anything left. We're talking at 37. The guy played 7 more years. So, you know, it's... leagues go through this, but the question then for the NFL was like, okay, who's going to be the new quarterbacks of the league? Well, they figured it out. Patrick Mahomes came along out of nowhere, so it's not crazy, right? You can have this delusional optimism about the Wizards right now. It's all right. And if they get the number one overall pick, you're going to get more of that. There's going to be a lot of that thought of like, oh, well, what can happen now? And that's a good thing. That's a good situation to be in. And I'm telling you now, even if they don't get the number one overall pick, there is still a chance that this team has a very good season next year. But we're getting that point in the NBA where a lot is very wide open. There's pieces moving around. There's teams kind of jockeying for a position. There's this look of, okay, the East is pretty open. In the West, it's, oh, God, we got to compete with the Thunder and Spurs. But that doesn't mean that another team can't come along and do that. Things change very, very quickly. I mean, very quickly. It's not the NFL where you have the worst to first as much. It takes a little longer in the NBA, and some of it's based on schedule, right? Like, you go and have a team that's just abysmal in, I mean, think of the Commanders, right? You think of what happened before they drafted Jaden Daniels. They had a last place schedule. They have a great quarterback, and it helps them propel themselves to 12 wins. There's a lot of factors that are in there, but schedule matters more in the NFL than the NBA because, again, you're not seeing every team. In the NBA, you're going to play every team multiple times. So it's a little bit different. So you're not going to necessarily have that big jump worst to first in the NBA that you do in the NFL, but it does exist. These big jumps do happen, and you just have to look at a lot of the other moving parts that are around there. And we've got a lot of that going on in the East and a lot of that going on in the NBA right now. I'll tell you what, if the Magic win today, though, and knock out the Pistons, again, the Pistons are the number one seed in the East. There is not one team in the Eastern Conference that you can look at as just hot, head and shoulders better than everybody else. And that's great news for the Wizards. It's great news for other teams that are obviously building their way through that too. But it can change really quickly in the NBA. So the future is bright for the Wizards, but you have to continue to go down that direction. Because, again, there was a point where the Magic were also in that spot, and then they kind of fell off a little bit, and then you see them blow a huge lead yesterday, and they have a chance to knock off the Pistons later today, and it's like, well, what are they right now? Magic took that jump, kind of like flatlined a little bit. So you got to keep that momentum going in the NBA when you're building a franchise. You got to keep it going year after year, and player development's a big part of that. Having draft picks where you can identify that talent and keep that team balance where you're starting to pay some of your stars. Like, all these things are really a big part of it. Hey, that's why it's really hard to build a champion. It's not an easy thing to do. And I think we realize that now. Joel Embiid had something to say after the game last night when the Sixers moved on to play the Knicks, and why that resonates really, really deeply with DC sports fans. Nick Ashew on the Fan. I got a tweet from Skins Wiz Caps, who says, is 45 wins possible next year for the Wizards we're talking about, or is that a bit unreasonable? And here's what I'll say. It's not unreasonable, but it's a lofty goal, right? Remember, the Wizards in this season they had, we all know what they were trying to do. If, and we're going to put all this in parentheses, here's how the Wizards can get to 45 wins next year and be in the conversation of where we're seeing Raptors, Cavs today in Game 7. You know, Pistons, Magic is a 1-8 matchup today. It was, you know, a 2-7 matchup yesterday with the Sixers coming back and winning that series. You know, all of that in a 7-game. I mean, again, the playoffs have been awesome in the NBA right now. But if you look at where the Wizards sit versus where they could be next year and how open the East is, like I was just talking about, here are some of the jumps that teams that are in the playoffs right now have had. Now, again, we're talking how the Wizards are rebuilding, the roster that they have, and this is also like with the expectation that they continue to do things right. The draft falls their way. This offseason involves maybe some other improvements. I know Anthony Davis is a question. So again, this is a lot of what ifs. But we're going to play the game here of what if, and we're going to fill in the blank with something positive versus what if everything goes terrible and nothing happens in the lottery and everything is terrible. Because, you know, we're going to change our mindset here, all right? The Commanders got back the old uniforms, but it makes everybody happy. So let's think the old era of getting a number one overall pick in John Wall. I don't know. I'm trying with the Wizards here. Work with me. But here's what I'm saying. So going off of that tweet specifically in 45 wins, the Pistons, after the 2022-2023 season, had 17 wins. At the end of 2024, they were 14-68. Last year, the Pistons went 44-38. So the Pistons went from 14 wins to 44 wins in one offseason. And they lost in the first round of the playoffs. That was last year. Now, that was the first year with J.B. Bickerstaff as the head coach for the Pistons. So coaching changes sometimes help there, too. I mean, Wizards may have a coach that's great at player development, might not be the head coach to take them to that next step. I always compare that to Steve Kerr, right? Took over for Mark Jackson. Warriors had 47 wins. The next year, they win a championship. So the Pistons went from 14 wins to 44 to this year 60. Now, they could lose in the first round of the Magic today in that Game 7. But it shows you the Pistons team that also built a lot through the draft. Not totally, but a lot through the draft. Cade Cunningham is the biggest reason. Jalen Duren, both guys they drafted. You go from 14 to 44 to 60 wins. Now let's look at the Spurs. The Spurs team that I think is going to be right on par with where the Thunder are. A Spurs team that I look at and say is going to be the rival of the Thunder, where we could see both those teams for the next 6-7 years competing for championships out in the West. Again, really good that the Wizards aren't in the Western Conference. Those teams are farther along, and they are established, and they got a road to a really successful future, too. So, here's the Spurs, and we know they were tanking, right, as they were trying to get Victor Wembanyama. 2022-2023 season, they went 22-60. The next year, 22-60 again for the Spurs. Last season, 22 wins jumped to 34 wins. So, not as big of a jump, but the West is tougher. The schedule is a little bit tougher out there for the Spurs. So the Spurs go from 22 wins to 34 wins to this year, 62. So big jumps are very possible in the NBA. Let's even look at the Thunder, the team that you know I love, the team whose model for building a franchise I think is, I mean, it is the blueprint for any NBA team. But granted, you got to be patient. It's a slow burn, right? It's a slow cook. This isn't searing a steak. This is 18 hours low and slow brisket, okay? But it's about the end goal. Now, remember, the Thunder, we're talking farther back, so we're going farther back in years. At the end of the 2020-2021 season, We're talking 22 wins for the Thunder. The next year, 24 wins. The next year, 2022-2023 season. I know it's a lot of numbers. Bear with me. So we're going from 22 wins to 24 wins to 40. That's the big jump for the Thunder. They went from 24 to 40 wins four seasons ago. Then from 40 wins to 57. That was the first year that the Thunder were the one seed in the West. They lost in the second round of the playoffs. Again, it's that second round for teams that make that big jump. It happens a lot. Sometimes it's the first round. Right, that was the Pistons last year. Might be the Pistons again this year. So the Thunder went 22 wins, 24 wins, big jump to 40. Another big jump, 57. And then last year, 68 NBA championship. This year again, 64, just swept the first round of the playoffs. So all that to be said, with a lot of numbers, I don't want to make your eyes glaze over and your ears burn, but that paints the picture right there. That you can absolutely, like WizSkinsCaps just tweeted me, or sorry, WizSkinsCapsNats, geez. I mean, it's all the teams. I should get that right. I'm sorry, but I think that's a valid question to ask because it is possible that you can make that massive jump in the NBA play, in the NBA, and then into the playoffs, right? You can get to that point where you have that big leap, you have that big jump. Now, there's a couple of factors for us to be talking about the Wizards in, you know, a playoff series going seven games this time next year. Let's just play that hypothetical. Let's just imagine ourselves. We're going to get our crystal ball. We're going to dream this up here. The Wizards next year win 45 games if, all right? The Wizards win 45 games next year and are in this playoff conversation like we're having now. If Alex Sarr takes another jump, so look at what he did from rookie year to this year. Big jump, looked a lot better. Team France was a lot of help there. He's gotten tougher, better. I mean, a lot of things have learned. The coaching staff gets a lot of credit with the Wizards and how he developed. He takes another leap. So it starts with that. That's a big one because we talk a lot about the lottery, but Alex Sarr is already on this roster. And right now, in terms of upside and in terms of growth, Alex Sarr has the highest level of anybody on this Wizards roster. So let's start with Alex Sarr taking that jump. Then let's go down the list and at least look at one or two other guys on this roster that are young that take that major leap. Is it Trey Johnson? Is it Bilal Coulibaly? Is it Will Riley? I love Will Riley. I talk about him a lot for a reason. He is the prototypical, you know, 6'10 stretch the floor wing in today's NBA that you just need to have. Guy can put the ball on the floor. I think there's so much upside with Will Riley. But let's say you get a leap of talent and growth from at least a couple of those guys moving forward. And I know I didn't name anybody. I'm giving you a couple of names here. But you got to have growth from a couple of the other guys. Then, the obvious one, number one overall pick. I mean, getting that would be a complete franchise changer. In this lottery, in this draft, like this is so massive for this team. But it doesn't have to be the number one overall pick. But it can be, I mean, that would be best case scenario. We're playing best case scenario. And then the other one, and I think this is the biggest question mark of all, what the hell happens with Anthony Davis? And that's where we start talking about if Anthony Davis is on this roster. Again, I don't think he is. I know he does not want to be there, but maybe that does change. Again, it's not even about, I don't like the Wizards or I don't like what they're doing. It's not. It's that Anthony Davis is a guy that's 45 and divorced that wants to get married again and continue his life path and where it was. The Wizards are the 25-year-old that wants to still go out till 2 a.m. on a Thursday night and party, and you're like, this is not my life anymore. I did that already. It's Gen Z and millennial. Like, it's different. Like, life is different. Millennials, we've done enough over the years. 45 is millennial still. It's older millennial, I think. We're going to go with that. The point is, different phases in life is where Anthony Davis and where the Wizards are. So I understand why he feels that way. I understand why he's looking around going, I just got traded again out of the blue. What am I supposed to do? So Anthony Davis at, you know, quality Anthony Davis, getting you like 23-10, plays 50 games even. Trae Young kind of has this rebirth a little bit where he's more efficient, a little more of a team guy. Don't count the assists. Please don't play that game with me. The Hawks are a better team without Trae Young. But again, the Wizards can make that jump because the talent of Trae Young taking them from worst record in the NBA to play-in team, it's there. It's that second leap that I just don't think is going to be brought to the table. But that's for later. So these are all best-case scenarios here. those things come together. You get A.J. DeBonsa in the draft. Yeah, this Wizards team could make that jump the way the Pistons went from 14 to 44 wins and then 44 to 60. The way the Spurs have made those massive jumps. The way the Thunder made those massive jumps. 24 to 40 wins. It's absolutely possible that a year from now, we are looking at the Wizards as a team that is, hey, are they going to be in the play-in or are they going to be a sixth seed in the East and not even have to worry about it? Now, again, that's high-end. That's rosy, happy, you know, perfect scenario. Everything goes their way. They could win 34 games and maybe fall just short, and they're just in the play-in tournament. I mean, this is all, there is a wide range of what can happen with the Wizards. But what I do know is that the way that they're building is exactly the way the Thunder and the Spurs and the Pistons have done this. And these are teams that are all top two in their conferences on either side. And even if the Pistons get knocked out by the Magic today, they've still built something that they can work with. Like, the Pistons are going to have to spend some time this offseason looking at, they need another go-to guy offensively, all right? And that's for later, and that's for them, but like that's how those next steps go. It takes time to build a team, and it takes time to build a team that's an actual contender. Again, the Thunder were a slow burn. If you want to read the article ESPN.com has going back to the Rashard Lewis sign and trade in 2007 and how that started this build. Now, the Wizards aren't taking that long because obviously the Thunder had multiple phases where, you know, this is the second rebuild of this team, but it's worked. There's another change. Like, it has worked multiple times for the Wizards. Sam Presti is the best general manager in the NBA. I'd argue top three in all of major professional sports right now. But if you look at how the Thunder have done this twice, I'll even take you back. So they had that sign and trade for Rashard Lewis. We all remember Rashard Lewis in D.C. You can go from the 2007-2008 season for the Sonics. God, remember the Sonics? They'll be back. Get ready. They won 20 games. Then they won 23 their first year as the Thunder when they moved. And then they went from 23 to 50 wins. Then to 55. Then only 47, but then 60 and 59. So the Thunder have done this twice already. They've been down this road. They're like, this is round two for us. They've got something that's more sustainable. Guys are staying versus, you know, Durant eventually leaving in free agency, trading James Harden and all that. So it's like the Thunder already did it once, and now they've done an even better job of making that big jump and rebuilding a team. But it's always been through the draft. It always works. You have to have people that can identify the talent. You have to have great talent development. But if the Wizards can do that, similar to the way that the Commanders need to do the same thing, to not just be a firework. Ooh, this is fun for a little while. No, it's long-term sustained success. That's what the Wizards are chasing. That's what the Commanders are chasing. But there is a chance that the Wizards next year, we are having a conversation about them being competitive in a first-round series in the playoffs. That is not unreasonable, but a lot of things have to fall their way to get to that 45-win mark, 40-win mark, whatever the case is. Let's even call it a 500. They're a 41-win team. Yeah, we'll take that. One league where you can still finish 500. I hate 17 games in the NFL. Uneven numbers, stupid. We know it's going to 18. So, yeah, I think this is a, we know this is a massive offseason, and a week from today, we are going to be doing whatever rituals we need to pray that the ping pong balls fall their way, and they got the number one overall pick. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Sixers knocking off the Celtics last night, coming back from 3-1 down. Look, I know the Celtics kind of mailed it in this year anyway. At first, that's what they thought they were doing. Then they went, wait, we could still win. And then Jason Tatum came back, but he missed Game 7. You know, the question, of course, is like, well, how much does that factor in? Yeah, probably some, but let's be real. Joel Embiid absolutely torched the Celtics since he came back. A couple weeks ago, had an appendectomy. 34-12-6 in that game. I know it wasn't just him. Here's the thing. The Sixers might have been a 7 seed, but they dealt with injuries and a Paul George suspension and all this stuff. You're looking around going, maybe this team was actually better than a 7 seed. The expectations were championship. They've got talent on that roster, so maybe we've overlooked the Sixers too much because we haven't watched them enough. Because they haven't been, you know, watched them all together. I mean, you know, like, I mean, this is what we're talking about here. I just can't believe the Sixers hadn't beat the Celtics in a playoff series since 1982. That's 44 years, man. That's a long, long time. Knicks Sixers is going to be a good series next round. That starts Monday. Two NBA Game 7s today. Magic Pistons, Raptors, Cavs. I mean, you really couldn't ask for a better start to these playoffs, especially in the East. I mean, I'll keep saying it, wide open. Wide open for teams, not just this year, but moving forward. After the Sixers knocked off the Celtics yesterday, though, and came back from that 3-1 series, Joel Embiid said something that I feel like really hits home for DC sports fans. It shows you that it happens everywhere. It shows you that it's something that, you know, every team deals with at some point, even if you're a competitive team, even if you're a team with, you know, higher aspirations, higher expectations. This was Joel Embiid on the next series against the Knicks and what he wants from Sixers fans.
You're going to need the support. You know, don't sell your tickets. This is bigger than you. We need you guys. We got a pretty good chance. We're going to need that support. We're going to need them to be extremely loud. If you need money, I got you.
So Joel Embiid obviously wants Sixers fans to show up at Sixers games. If you go back, there is a history here where Knicks fans in 2024 made that 2-hour something drive, if you're coming from New York, took over Xfinity Mobile Arena. They were chanting Knicks in 5, and it became a whole thing. Remember that? That was the first round of the playoffs last year. We know what it's like, right? We know what it's like to see, you know, Philadelphia fans showing up at various D.C. sporting events, whether it was the Eagles at the end of the old Redskins era. We remember that. That also helped push Dan Snyder out, I would argue, because it started to show that it was a complete disaster there and no fans were actually showing up to games. So good job, by the way. Sometimes you need to do that. Sometimes you need to not show up to make your point to an organization. Obviously, this is different, but I mean, even when it was like Nats Phillies, we've seen time and time again, or Mets fans showing up. But, I mean, you could even talk about outside the NL East, but the Nats have had this problem for a while. It's kind of notorious for an easy away fan venue in baseball, right? It's geography matters, where you're located matters, because you got Phillies fans, you got Mets fans, you got Yankees fans coming in, you got Red Sox fans. Those are all basically 4-hour drives, and you know DC is pretty transient too. So yeah, you got fans from other teams that show up just for those games, and it's baseball. It's a long season. You're not going to sell out every single game, and I get it. Joel Embiid's talking about the playoffs. He's talking about every time in my head, playoffs, it just happens. I still to this day, it happens. Whenever I say that word, this is a little ridiculous. But, you know, it's a little bit of a different situation, but like that kind of hits home, you know? As I think about it, you know, the Redskins era, even the beginning of this Commanders era a little bit, there's been, even though we have a lot more hope, there's a lot more excitement. I mean, you win 5 games last year, there's only so much that you can do. But, man, when it was FedEx Field, it was... think about how many times we saw Eagles fans there. We saw Steelers fans there on a Sunday night game, a Monday night game, whatever.
Patriots fans.
Patriots fans, Metal Chris, like all the time.
Tom Brady said it felt like a home game, remember?
That right there, what you just said, is like the worst part about it, is when somebody from an away team says they feel like they're playing at home, which is similar to what Joel Embiid said too. Tom Brady, what year was that? Do you remember what year that was?
No, but I think that was the one they put up like 60 on us. It was real
something.
Bad.
Yeah.
I think it was Joe Gibbs' return. It was in that era.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, that was a long time ago, but it's been a history for, you know, that history's been there for a while. But I think, you know, listen, as DC sports fans, we've been jaded for a long time. And we have, again, my home studio here. I got a District of Champions framed, I don't know if you call it a poster, whatever it is, sitting behind me in my backdrop. But that was just 2018 to 2019. Now, that's it. That's the only era we really got with that before everything changed. And, you know, this has been an ongoing problem. It's not even – so here's what I would say. It's not a fan loyalty problem with DC fans. It's a jaded fan problem. It's a frustrated fan problem because we've watched, you know, the Redskins and the dysfunction that they were for so long. We've watched the Wizards spin their tires in the mud of NBA purgatory trying to fight for just a play-in tournament, and that's it. We've watched the Nats, not spend. But I mean, like, here's the thing. I look back a little bit, Metal Chris, and I say there was an era where they were a World Series contender, but baseball's a little different because you have, you know, 81 home games and because it's such a big stadium and you're not going to always have, like, a weekday, you know, the Phillies come to town and it's a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday series. You're going to have Philadelphia fans that are close by or already live in the area in D.C. showing up to these games. So it's a little bit harder because you have so many games in baseball. The Caps are really the only one that's kind of doesn't have that reputation. You're always going to have some home, you know, away fans showing up. But they don't have it as much because they've been so consistent. You have Alex Ovechkin there, and you know they won a Stanley Cup. But even after the Nats won the World Series, like that was it. They gutted that whole team. So it's right back to, like, why am I going to go when they're completely rebuilding? And it's been a perpetual rebuild now for 6 years. And, you know, for the Caps, they win the Stanley Cup, but at least they're a playoff contender moving forward. They didn't gut the roster. So I kind of put the Caps aside from all these other teams. It's a little bit different. But, man, it hits home. Like, it hits home when you start looking at Joel Embiid talking about Sixers fans actually showing up to games in the playoffs against the Knicks. That's the same thing we want here. And, like, I remember that. I just remember those days. You know what? I'll even throw the number out. 800-636-1067. If you got any stories of dealing with those away fans showing up to any game in D.C., you can just tell a story. This is Sunday, man. We're going to roll a little different today. You know, we're going to just... If you got a story of what that is was like for you, I think that's really interesting because, you know, it's one thing if you're sitting there and you're talking about a playoff game, but it's happened here in D.C. too. We've still had that. Nats games, I mean...
I can tell you what it used to be like back in RFK in the old days.
Oh, it was a lot different, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, man. Uh-huh. So my folks had season tickets. We had four tickets. They're up in the nosebleeds. We didn't have great seats. We were sitting by the press box, basically, way in the back. And, you know, if you came in, especially if you were wearing another NFC East team, if you were wearing Eagles, Cowboys, Giants, anything like that, you were walking out with black eyes.
Yep.
Like, you didn't just walk into that state. It didn't even matter if they were playing. If you were wearing one of those jerseys, man, you didn't show up like that, you know? Everybody that had a ticket was a season ticket holder, and it was a real sense of community. You knew all the people that sat near you because it's the same people every week, you know?
Yeah. And now, again, that's a different – football's different, too, because you know, it's once a week. It's, you know, eight games. Well, normally it was eight games. Now it's all weird with the 17-game schedule. But, yeah, you had your people around you every single week. It was kind of the same. It was more of a feeling of community. So it's a little bit
different. Outside the stadium and the parking lot and the tailgating, like there's just a real sense of community there, you know?
We never got that with FedEx Field / Northwest Stadium now.
Yeah, you never saw a bunch of people rolling up in a bunch of Steelers gear and
Well, think about the era. The entire time was basically Dan Snyder in charge, and it was an S show most of the time. So, you know, the culture sucked. So the hope now is obviously that's a fresh start, and you're avoiding any of that. It's going to take time, but you build trust with the fan base. That's part of what it is. The teams in D.C. all have to build trust with fan bases again.
I don't think Dan Snyder cared who he was selling tickets to.
No, he didn't care. No.
You know, he didn't really care if it was Skins fans or people coming from out of town. He didn't.
No.
As long as he was moving tickets, he didn't care. Whereas I don't think Josh Harris wants a stadium full of out-of-towners. You know?
Josh Harris is the politician that got elected that is doing the opposite of what the previous person in that role did. That's what it is. It's whatever Dan Snyder did, you do the opposite, and you will succeed.
George Costanza theory, yeah.
Yeah, really, that's all that it is. I mean, it's so true. 800-636-1067 if you want to jump on. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. I'm at Nick Ashew on Twitter, and, well, if you're a TikToker, yeah, I'm there too. You got to do it, right? Everybody does everything now.
I ain't got no TikTok.
I feel like you'd be fun on TikTok. You just have concert clips and stuff.
I got too many social medias already. I'm done. I don't need more.
Spoiler alert, Metal Chris, there's only going to be more. This is how it's going to go.
Yeah, I just don't need them all. I don't mean my old grumpy man phase. I'm just kind of like, I don't need them. I don't need to be on all the things all the kids are on. I don't care.
Listen, you do you, my friend. I'm not going to tell you what to do. You do whatever makes you happy. But it is, there's a certain point where I get it. There are only too much. Then there's going to be more, and then somebody copies somebody else, and it's the way that it goes. 800-636-1067. Joel Embiid was talking about Sixers fans showing up to games, not letting the Knicks fans take over the home arena when the Knicks and Sixers start playing next week. Now, it's going to be in New York first, but, you know, after Madison Square Garden. I respect that. I mean, we've had that certainly before. That hits home here in D.C., right? I mean, we've seen it. We've seen, and sometimes, it's deserved. I remember saying for years on the station the previous time that I was on it, I was like, look, stop showing up to games when they were the Redskins. I'm like, don't do it. If you do that, it at least makes some kind of a point. You keep giving them your money. Dan Snyder's going to be like, well, we're making money. And that all changed. I like to think that I made that happen all by myself. Is that not the case?
Look, I take some of the credit for him selling the team as well. Because I don't know if you know this, but when I first hired on here at 106.7 The Fan, it was about like a week later that he sold the team.
Well, you know what?
I just want to tell everyone that everything's happened since then. You can blame on me. Thank you.
You are... The good luck charm that got rid of Dan Snyder, something we thought would never happen.
Yeah, that big sell the team party we had was like one of my first days working here. It was awesome.
Well,
Josh Harris bought me a beer. It was great.
I'd like to think that you were the guy that made it all happen. So, Metal Chris, you are the good luck
charm.
We
can share credit. It's part of me.
There you
go.
Yeah. Listen, it's a team effort. We all got to do a little piece, our little part.
I'm just saying, we're on that podium together, me and you.
Hey, can you bring that lucky, lucky whatever it is that you're bringing, juju, to the NBA draft lottery next week?
I've been trying that for years.
Let's bring that if we can. All right, let's go to Tommy in Annandale. What's up, Tommy?
Hey, first-time caller, long-time listener, you two rock. I wanted to share my experience going to the 2009 Swinging Gate game against the Giants.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if you all remember this. There was a blizzard in the area about a week before. So not only that, we're going in. We weren't sure if we were going to make it to the game. My dad would take me in about one game a year. When I was a kid, and so it was tough to resell the tickets. I'm going in, and I kid you not, it's at least 60% blue in there. They start running up the score, and I have Giants fans turning to me. I'm about 11 years old, and they're saying, "We are so sorry." And, you know, the genuine empathy just took over, and in hindsight, it was the beginning of the end for the Snyder era. I'm so glad that I went. I made my dad stay for the whole game, but it was something I'm never going to forget.
Thank you, Tommy. And, man, you know it's bad when fans from the team that is on the road are invading your stadium and then apologizing for it, watching what you have to suffer through. God.
1,000%.
Thank you, Tommy. Good stuff. And it's like the minute he said swinging gate, too, I went, oh, no. I mean, one of the most notorious moments in this franchise's history. I was talking to Zabe about that on Friday. That's what it was. When Zabe and I were together on Friday, and I remember, like, we all remembered, right? Swinging gate. If you're old enough to remember it at all, I mean, that's, we're talking 16 years ago already. That's insane. But going back to that, you remember it. It's like, they tried that stupid play, and then Jim Zorn was like, oh, gee golly, we should try this again. Everybody sees what you're doing. It's the dumbest play in history. It's the top three worst play in NFL history ever called. I mean, you got fans from another team apologizing. That's why when Joel Embiid said that, I was like, oh, I get it, you know? And we're not rooting for anything Philadelphia-wise here. Let's be honest with ourselves. But you know what it's like to see it. I think there's a difference, though, too, between, and it's not even a thing, there is a massive difference between team is really bad, shouldn't show up because they're dysfunctional as hell, and playoff game, you should show up and support this team. There's a big difference in those, right? Like, honestly, next year, even if the Wizards aren't great, it's a team that has a blueprint, has a path, as long as you're starting, like, they're not dysfunctional, they're not a mess, they're building the team the right way. Supporting a team that's rebuilding but not winning is different than not showing up for a team that's dysfunctional with no direction. We all know the difference. We all see it, right? There's a very big difference between the two. And there's a difference there. We're fans, right? You can make your point known. You can it is very clear. We ain't showing up because you don't deserve to be supported like this. Like, that's really the difference. So 800-636-1067 if you want to jump on. What Dan Quinn had to say about the Commanders draft, and Daniel Jeremiah as well, on Sonny Styles. Nick Ashew on the Fan.